This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. So, I don't know about you, but I have a few non-negotiable self-care rituals. Admittedly, they've changed pretty dramatically since I've had kids. I don't have time for super long showers or skincare routines, but even when I feel like I don't have enough time for myself, I do make time for mindfulness. Therapy is one piece of my mindfulness journey, and I've been super grateful for the help that therapy has given me in navigating the new normal that is my life. It supports you in learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries, and it also really empowers you to be the best version of yourself. Even if you don't have a ton of time on your hands, resources like BetterHelp can make therapy achievable on a tight schedule. It's entirely online, and it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/goodtogether today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/goodtogether.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create change in the world every day. Keep listening for actionable tips and tricks to incorporate eco-friendly practices into your daily life.
We've been featured by Apple as the number one podcast for conscious consumers, and we can't wait to welcome you into our community of changemakers. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Laura. We're the founders of Brightly.eco, the new platform for conscious consumers. We believe in supporting all creatures, great and small.
And our team of experts show you how to live and shop responsibly by sharing world-changing lifestyle ideas, products, and more. To read show notes from Good Together and to browse all of the planet-friendly goodness that we feature, head to brightly.eco/podcast.
And to help spread the word about the podcast, tap on this episode and share Good Together with your friends and family. A simple text message helps us grow and create change around the world.
This episode is brought to you by Sheets and Giggles. Laura, you've probably heard me talk all the time about my love for Sheets and Giggles. I've been sleeping on their new sustainable eucalyptus sheets for the past 8 months straight. I recommend them 1000%. Every week I wash them and put them back on the bed right away. They're my go-to sheets. All of my other sheets, even the ethical ones, are taking a long break.
After hearing you rave about them for so long, Lisa, I finally got a chance to try their new eucalyptus comforter. So I'm a weirdo. I really like having a comforter on my bed all the time, even when we have the heat blasting. I haven't woken up once hot while I was using this one from Sheets and Giggles. It's a great ethical and sustainable alternative to the down comforter we used to use that's now sitting on our guest bed. Another thing I love about Sheets and Giggles is that they don't use plastic packaging and the materials don't use pesticides, so they're kind to our animal and insect friends.
They also plant a tree for each sheet set that is sold, and they're passionate about giving back. They give 10% off to customers who donate their old sheets to homeless shelters, and they have donated over $40,000 to Colorado COVID relief.
Good Together listeners get 15% off by using the code BRIGHTLYECO at SheetsGiggles.com.
Plant-based diets seem to be getting more popular by the day, with even the biggest meat eaters swapping steaks for salads. That shift isn't just happening for health reasons, but also because eating less animal products is one of the best ways to slow the effects of climate change. Someone who knows it all too well is Shiri Avnery, the COO and co-founder of Thistle, a company that delivers ready-to-eat, plant-forward meals straight to your door. In today's episode, we talk about the benefits of being a flexitarian, the difference between a vegetarian and vegan diet, delicious meatless recipes, and more. Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to the new episode of Good Together. And today we are talking about one of my favorite topics. If you guys remember, one of my goals for last year and this year, one of my big sustainability goals is to eat less meat, right? We have learned, hopefully, you've been following us, our discussions, our social conversations. We have learned how much impact, negative impact, meat, especially red meat, has on the environment. And this is kind of my personal goal, is to cut my meat consumptions. And you also probably have heard us talk about thistle before, right, on our podcast. And thistle is a plant-forward meal delivery service. Right now, it's mostly on the West Coast. And today, I'm talking with Thistle's co-founder, Shiri Avnery. And Shiri has a very interesting background. We will be talking all about meatless meal, eating less meat, and flexitarian diets, right? At Brightly, we're all about being flexible, being realistic in terms of how we're approaching our sustainable living and lifestyles. And that's why I'm really excited to talk to Shiri about that. Shiri also, besides being a co-founder and COO of Thistle, she also has a PhD in environmental science and policy. So I'm very curious about that. So why don't I stop talking? And Shiri, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience? Tell us a bit about yourself and how and why you started Thistle.
Great. Yes, happy to. And thank you so much, Lisa. I'm so grateful to be here. So as you mentioned, my name is Shiri. I am the co-founder and CEO of Thistle. My other co-founder is actually my husband, Ash. We're a married team, somehow still married.
Wow, that's so rare. Yeah.
Right? Yeah, still married after working together for over 7 years now. But prior to Thistle, as you mentioned, I was actually in the academic world researching various dimensions of environmental science, and especially the intersection between climate change, air pollution, and food. I've actually been really passionate about earth and environmental science ever since I was exposed to it by an incredible teacher back in the eighth grade. And I followed that passion all the way through college and a PhD and then some years beyond. But I eventually decided I wanted to do a little bit more than be in the academic world where, you know, I felt like the pace of change it felt a little bit slow. And Ash and I would talk a lot about how two of the greatest challenges of our generation are growing health crisis and the climate and environmental emergency really pointed to a common solution around eating more plants and eating less meat. And yet, despite our passion for it, despite our knowledge about it, we found it really hard to eat that way consistently, just like many others. Because the obstacles are really hard, right? You don't have time to figure out how to eat this way. It's difficult to find time to cook. You don't know how to make it taste good. It's expensive. All those reasons around taste and access and convenience and even affordability. So that's really the challenge that we set out to solve with Thistle, is how can we make it really easy, but also really delightful to follow a healthy plant-based and planet-friendly diet. And so that's what we do. We do it by delivering delicious, ready-to-eat, healthy, plant-forward meals to your doorstep. Everything from breakfast, lunch, dinner, healthy snacks, and juices. And we hope that by doing this and providing really delicious food at that intersection of convenience and health and sustainability, we can make following a plant-based diet or a plant-forward diet really easy to do and something to enjoy as well.
Yeah, I can't agree more with you. I think our listeners, again, have already heard me talk about Thistle and kind of why I decided to try it myself. Both Laura and I, of course, have tried it. And that's exactly as you said, right? Like myself, especially over the past year, right? We're all living during the pandemic. We're all cooking a lot. I have been quite successful in terms of cooking at least more vegetarian meals, but vegan, it's something I haven't mastered. I mean, obviously, besides the typical like avocado toast, right, or like a very obvious easy vegan, or just like salads, for example,
right.
It has been a challenge for me to create delicious, as you mentioned, delicious and flavorful. I eat a ton of spicy food. Our listeners probably heard me talk about that. So like, I'm really looking forward to very flavorful dishes. And yeah, it's been such an easy kind of switch for me, like just getting, you can get Thistle meals once per week, I think three times per week or even more often, but it's just like such an easy addition. And then it also inspires me to try these meals, right? It's like, right. Oh, wow, I can actually eat this amazing, delightful, vegan bowl or a noodle dish and stuff like that. Well, right. So let's talk about, Thistle, you guys say plan forward, and that's because yeah. you have both vegan, vegetarian, and protein-based meals, correct? So you do offer meat dishes to subscribers who are members.
That's correct.
Who want. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's an interesting, I was just talking about that to my friend, and, she's not necessarily super into sustainability. And I was talking to her about Thistle. She's like, oh, okay. Well, if they have meat, yeah, it's good for me because there are people who can't imagine not eating meat in a meal.
That's right.
Yeah. So anyways, so let's talk about this flexitarian diet that I mentioned at the beginning. Folks obviously around the world, especially in the US, are continuing to prioritize their health and do their part to slow the effects of climate change, which is great news. Okay. So, but what is behind the rise in popularity of these diets? Why they are popular? Should they be popular? Let's talk a bit about that.
Yeah, sure. It's a really great question. And you're right. It is getting more and more popular. I think I saw a recent study that showed that 9 in 10 Americans are looking to eat more plants, and over half are looking to reduce their meat consumption.
That's
and
awesome.
It's really great, and are open to trying some of these plant-based meat alternatives, which is awesome. And just for some context, we've seen this in our own customer base over the last 5 years, especially. So right now, around 70% of our customers are on fully plant-based plans. And only around 30% or even a little less are choosing a sustainable meat add-on option, like you mentioned. But 5 years ago, it was almost the exact opposite, which I find really fascinating to see how that's shifted over time with the rise of the plant-based and the flexitarian movement. And I think even more telling is the fact that even though right now we have about 70% of our customers are on these essentially vegan plans, only 10 to 20% self-identify as vegan or vegetarian. So they are really part of this flexitarian movement as well. And I guess I think a number of things are driving this. It's like you mentioned, people's expectations around food are changing. It's not just enough to be tasty or convenient. It has to be healthy and clean and not overly processed. Especially these days, we see this growing awareness of the idea of food as medicine, right? And they need to invest in proper nutrition.
Yes.
We're getting more and more aware that we're eating way too much meat, especially red and processed meat. I think we eat about 10 times more than we should as the average American. There's growing awareness around
the
destructive.
10 times.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Isn't that insane? And there's growing awareness around the horrible impacts of animal agriculture on our ecosystem, right? And each year, I think the fact that these climate change impacts are becoming, more and more acutely felt are helping to contribute to this sense of urgency that we need to make changes now, today. And what I really like about this is it's one powerful change we can all choose to make, every single day, three times a day or more. And for me, I think the last thing is that we've seen the kind of mainstreaming of plant-based through the success of companies like Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat. And they've helped to go after the average consumer, not just those who are, already bought into the plant-based movement. And
I think that
their success has helped show that you don't need to sacrifice taste. It doesn't need to be all or nothing. So overall, I think it's really great. These incremental changes matter when it comes to reducing your footprint, and you can derive a lot of the benefits from plant-based without giving up meat completely. So I'm really a big fan of the flexibility of the flexitarian movement.
Yeah, no, and it's exactly as you probably know, our approach at Brightly, right? We're all about being imperfectly sustainable. Nobody's right. will ever be perfect, whether with your diet, or purchasing behavior, fashion choices, all of that stuff.
Right.
As these companies that you've mentioned, Impossible Food, Beyond Meat, they had to go after, an average consumer, just like me and you, right? Thistle and Brightly, because the scalable massive impact will be made, by these imperfect consumers, right? Not by vegans or vegetarians who are eating plant-based meals 100% of the
That's
time.
That's right. Couldn't
exactly.
agree more.
Yeah, so let's talk about proven health benefits and eating less of eating less meat, if there are any. I'm sure there are, of course, but you know, we always want to be a little bit skeptical. So sure. Just like, I know you have a PhD, you probably you know, done a lot of researching on this, and then you sure. started a company.
No, and nutrition science is, you know, it's there's all kinds of studies, and it feels like it, you know, one day you see one thing, the next day it's something else. So I get that. It's really confusing. But as a whole, there actually is a lot of really great evidence that people who eat a whole food plant-based diet, and I want to emphasize like whole food here. I'm not talking about like a junk food vegan diet. I'm talking about, you know, minimally processed, slow metabolizing foods like fruits, vegetables, whole grains, you know, legumes, nuts and seeds. So people who eat a diet like this generally get a ton of great nutrition and a ton of great, you know, vitamins, minerals, protein, fiber with fewer calories. And that generally tends to mean that they have lower BMI, they weigh less, but way more importantly, they have lower risk of all kinds of chronic diseases, including many of the leading causes of death and disability in the US, right? Including like heart disease, hypertension, stroke, diabetes, certain cancers, and even Alzheimer's. And I think what's even more telling is there's actually evidence that this kind of a whole food plant-based diet can be effective not only at preventing and treating, but also even reversing some of these diseases, which is really striking for me. And it's really striking also to think about that, like, a lot of us think we have no control over whether we get sick with some of these chronic illnesses, and it's just in our genes. But research really shows that genetics only accounts for maybe 10 to 20% of that risk. And it's really lifestyle, you know, like poor diet, whether or not you exercise, whether or not you smoke, that are the bigger drivers. Yeah. And unfortunately, the American diet right now is like only about 10, 11% of, you know, plant-based whole foods. And the rest of it is coming from processed foods or animal foods. So we're just so far from this.
Wow, I didn't realize it. And when you said 10, that Americans eat 10 times more than they should of meat, that sounds about right as well. And one thing, and I'm glad you're mentioning processed foods, and that was one of the things I wanted to address in our conversation too. Whenever we talk with our community about vegan products, vegan options, I have tried Impossible Burger, I've tried Beyond Meat and stuff like that, which tastes great and they're fine, but correct me if I'm wrong. A lot of times I'm still skeptical about, for example, egg substitutes, right? That whatever it's called, I don't remember the brand name. I'm a bit skeptical in terms of like, okay, wouldn't it be better for my health just to eat a regular egg instead of eating some kind of substitute, which I'm not quite sure what's right. exactly in it? So can right. you talk a bit more about those kind of products?
Yeah, I think that is the big criticism of these kind of, you know, first generation meat replacements is that they're not necessarily the cleanest of foods, and they're not necessarily the healthiest of foods, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a pretty fair criticism. That's actually why we don't currently use Beyond Meat, Impossible Foods, and things like that in our own meals at Thistle, because we have pretty strict standards mm-hmm. about wanting to make sure that the foods we use are really clean label, right? So I have nothing against those foods. I think they're delicious. I enjoy them. You know, am I going to eat it every day? Probably not, because it's not, I don't consider it a health food. However, for somebody who is looking to make a better choice for the environment, no question that those are, you know, better options. But there are some really great, I'd call them second generation meat imitation products that are mm-hmm. coming down the line that are that tend to be a little bit cleaner. They don't have like a long list of unrecognizable ingredients. And we are starting to incorporate some of those in our meals. For example, we use this really great substitute for ground meat that's based out of just pure dehydrated pea protein. And it cooks mm-hmm. up just like, you know, a ground turkey or ground meat. And it's really versatile. So things like that tend to be really great, and they're healthy as well.
Very. Yeah, and I think it's always kind of a problem and a challenge whenever a consumer has to be doing a tons of research themselves, right? About all of this ingredient list, things they don't understand. Yeah, that's a big barrier for me and other consumers probably like me who are thinking about eating less meat. I'm like, but I'd prefer just to eat like a very healthy local piece of steak instead of, you know, having to read through ingredients or like 20 ingredients that I don't recognize any of them. So talking about the research, do you have any specific books or research studies you could recommend to our listeners if they want to educate themselves more on the topic, especially of the health benefits, you know, vegan versus vegetarian and things like that?
Yeah, sure. So on the health benefits piece of it, I got a lot out of a book called How Not to Die. It's by a nutritionist and physician, Michael Greger, and he kind of walks
love the through... title. Love the title.
Yeah, right? But it's great. He walks through how nutrition contributes to the top causes of premature death and disease in the U.S., including things like heart disease, cancers, et cetera, and how food can really be medicine in preventing and treating them. And I really like how he goes through the nutritional science in a digestible way, and he makes clear the importance of a whole food, you know, plant-based diet for not just long life, but disease-free life. So that's a really good one on the health side. There's, you know, my bread and butter is on the environmental impact, so I've got a bunch of suggestions on that front for you.
Please share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. There's this great article that came out in Science by Porin Nemec in 2018, and it looked at the impact of various food products across numerous metrics of sustainability. And so things like climate change and contribution to pollution and freshwater use and land use and all those things. And it also looked at 40,000 farms worldwide. And the reason it was so important is that it demonstrated how what you eat is so much more important than where or how it was produced or packaged. So we tend to spend a lot of our time, you know, asking, hey, was it locally sourced or was it in compostable packaging, et cetera, when these supply chain emissions generally tend to contribute less than 20% of the overall impact of the product. And really it's all about the fact that meat is just many, 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 like tens to hundreds of times worse across a number of different categories. So the questions we should really be asking from an environmental perspective is, you know, does this product that I'm eating, you know, contain meat, or how much meat does it contain, or how many animal products, right? So that's one. I think it's a really good paper. And then there's recently a paper came out in November, I think it was also in Science, and it highlighted the importance of addressing food emissions in order to meet our goals under the Paris Climate Agreement. So it showed that even if you reduce or actually eliminate fossil fuel emissions completely, emissions from the global food system alone would make it impossible to limit warming to that aggressive 1.5 degrees Celsius warming target, and even very difficult to realize the 2 degree target. Isn't that, like that, I thought that was pretty remarkable.
Kind of disheartening, but yeah.
I know. It just shows that we have to address major changes are required, right, in our food system. We have to address this if we have any chance of meeting the goals of the Paris Agreement. And the paper also looked at different mitigation measures, right? And so it looked at things like, let's increase food yields by 50% or cut waste by 50%. And it also looked at, hey, what if we move towards a more plant-rich diet. So not, again, it's more in the flexitarian realm. It's not fully vegan, but plant-rich is what they called it. And that actually had the largest impact, more than any of the other mitigation measures, which is pretty great. And then one last paper I'll mention, because this is actually a really depressing one, but it's just crazy. So the World Wildlife Fund's Living Planet Report. So this one came out a few months ago as well, and it kind of looked at our overall wildlife species health, and it's pretty insane. It documented a nearly 70% population decline in wildlife species globally in the last 50 years, which is just like a biological blink of an eye, or a geological blink of an eye, right? And it in some regions, that number is like closer to 95%.
You're right.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I'm so taken aback by it. And I think it's important to remember some of these other environmental impacts, you know, beyond climate change that our agricultural system and meat specifically has on the planet, like this overuse of resources and pollution and habitat destruction that ends up leading to species population loss of the scale.
This episode is brought to you by Sheets and Giggles, a company with a punny name but a seriously sustainable mission to make better bedding for everyone. We started partnering with Sheets and Giggles earlier this year, and the positive reviews from our community keep coming in.
I've been on a hunt for sustainable bedding for a long time now until Brightly actually recommended Sheets and Giggles. I would highly recommend. The material is great. I personally tend to get hot at night and my boyfriend tends to get cold. So it definitely serves as a happy medium. Highly recommend.
I also get hot at night, and I found that after sleeping with Sheets and Giggles moisture-wicking sheets over the past few months, I can't remember the last time I woke up overheated.
I love my Sheets and Giggles sheets. They're my absolute favorite. Not only because they're super duper soft, but they are sustainably and ethically made out of eucalyptus.
Yep, I love that our scout Ashley called out how soft the Sheets and Giggles sheets are. Plus, the eucalyptus that is in their 400 thread count sheets is grown without insecticides or pesticides. They also just launched a bunch of new colors, and I can't choose between navy, blue, and red. Help me!
Sheets and Giggles bedding is super lightweight and soft, and they really nail it on zero waste packaging.
We recommend Sheets and Giggles for the softest, most sustainable sleep out there. Good Together listeners get 15% off at checkout by using the code BRIGHTLYECO at sheetsgiggles.com.
Oh my God, Laura, I just had my favorite vegan lunch ever. It was a green Thai curry.
That sounds amazing, but what's your secret? I feel like plant-based meals have always been a pipe dream for me. I've been trying to cut down on my meat consumption, but I really don't have time to think up and prepare filling, tasty vegan meals.
Same here. I've been participating in a vegan cooking challenge with the Brightly community, and I feel like I've totally failed. Seriously. I feel like I've learned so many more meatless recipes this year, but when it comes to vegan cooking, I'm still very much intimidated. So when Thistle reached out to us, it was the perfect timing.
Thistle's plant-forward meals are seriously tasty and are delivered ready to go on your doorstep. Right now, they're just on the West Coast, but they're adding more locations. Anyway, I was really surprised at how filling and super creative the meals are. The spices and the sauces they include are really unique and tasty.
I loved how fresh everything was as well, given that it's mostly vegetable-based. Laura, I know both you and I love to cook, especially during the pandemic, but it's been a great addition to our weekly routines. It's a quick alternative to takeout lunches between Zoom calls.
Absolutely. Thistle is plant-based eating on autopilot. You don't even have to think about it, and bam, you're eating better for the planet. Good Together listeners can get $100 off with the code BRIGHTLY at thistle.co. That's thistle.co.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. And of course, for listeners, don't worry. You guys don't have to take notes. We will be sharing and linking to all of these resources in our show notes on our website. So, but yeah, thank you so much for sharing this. We're always trying to strike a balance and brightly with between, you know, sharing all of this research and knowledge, right? And also not making it too depressing.
But no,
we
I'm
do
sorry
need to
about
know
that.
And learn the facts. No, that's fine. We need to know that to be able to take action, right? So let's talk about, we've talked a little bit about flexitarian approach, right? So let's talk specifically a bit about vegetarian versus vegan diets. To you, what I mean, obviously we know specific definitions, but what are the main differences beyond the obvious ones? What are the main differences both for the health of you and the planet?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so right, we know generally, definitionally, vegans avoid animal products altogether. Vegetarians might eat things like dairy and eggs where the animal was involved, but not killed. So in terms of the main differences for your health, I think, you know, it's kind of complicated. Again, you get back to this nutritional science, which shows one thing or another, depending on the latest trend or study. But some studies have certainly found links between eating dairy and some kinds of cancer. Some then say that that doesn't exist. Some between have found links between eggs and heart disease, maybe. And some say that that doesn't exist. There certainly have been studies that show that some of these types of animal products could be beneficial in providing essential nutrients in specific diets that lack, you know, nutrient diversity and can therefore be a good source of that kind of nutrition. But there are a lot of studies that show that vegans actually outperform vegetarians in terms of having the most risk reduction in terms of risk of chronic disease and also in weight management and in, you know, longevity, long life. So I think the important thing to remember on the health side of this is that like if you want to incorporate animal products into your diet, it should always be supplemental to, you know, unprocessed plant-based foods, you know, part of the tenets of a flexitarian diet. And in terms of planetary impacts, I will say that dairy is actually a pretty high impact food category across numerous metrics.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Including climate change and resource use and pollution. So for example, cheese has about 25 times the impact of peas and 5.5 times the impact of tofu. Eggs are a bit of a better choice. It's about 10 times the impact of peas and twice the impact of tofu. So still much higher, not nearly as higher as yeah. beef, but so I guess like in a hierarchy of things to get rid of, you know, beef and lamb are definitely first and foremost to go get rid of as much of that Absolutely. As possible. Right. And yeah. And then dairy and pig meat and then poultry and eggs seem to kind of have the lowest overall impact across that category. But as a whole, studies show that vegetarianism can cut your emissions by about half and veganism by, 70 to even upwards of 85% from what I've seen in the recent literature.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's obvious. Yeah. Vegetarian, we all keep sharing this data in our community and on socials, you know, red meat and lamb are kind of the most intensive in terms That's right. of the negative impact on the environment, as you guys listeners probably know. So you've mentioned cheese, and cheese has actually, interestingly enough, been the most difficult for me to cut to cut down on whenever I try to like create like a vegetarian pasta. I'm like, yeah. that's fine. But then I'm like, well, I'm just going to throw a little bit of like a cream or half and half that's or right. some bunch of Parmesan cheese. And like, because like without it, I'm like, it's just a little bit bland. So let's talk about the recipes, right? Yeah. Again, until I discovered Thistel and I got your delicious meals. Yeah, I don't think I've actually created myself like a nice vegan, 100% vegan, vegetarian, yes, but not vegan meal. So maybe can you share a few, like maybe one, two, maximum three of the go-to recipes for meat lovers, but that are vegan?
Sure, yes. So in terms of recipes, I think if you're specifically talking about for meat lovers who really want that taste and texture and feeling of meat. One of the things I love are jackfruit carnitas. Jackfruit's a great substitute for
yes,
meat. Yeah.
It was the first time I tried jackfruit. Some of our Scouts ambassadors, they were talking about jackfruit, but I did not taste it until I got it in Thistel, and it was amazing.
Yeah, isn't it? And it's so versatile, and it cooks up similar to pulled pork, has a similar texture, and it absorbs all of that. You know, you can braise it and have in a combination of onions and garlic and cumin and chili and spices, and it just like soaks that all up, and it's really delicious. Like I love it. So that's one of my kind of go-to favorites. And I mentioned earlier the pea protein crumbles that we use. I mean, I think these are really fantastic. Yes. They're so clean, and in terms of the ingredient list, it's just dehydrated peas and they absorb all the delicious spices you cook them up in. So we make like a ground ground meat or like a flavorful chorizo even. You can use it on things, everything from, you know, taco salad to tofu scrambles to paella. It really just helps to kind of pull everything together and like hit that, you know, craving of meat. So those are a couple for meat. And then you mentioned cheese. I actually am very similar to you. I also miss cheese way more than meat, actually. So something that's really popular in our house is actually a thistle recipe that I love, which is to do a plant-based take on like a pub cheese, which is made by soaking raw cashews. And you blend it with whole grain mustard and bell peppers and, you know, spices like paprika and garlic and a bit of nutritional yeast, which is really great to give it that cheesy quality. Also has B12, which is great for vegans. And it results, you blend it all together and you get a smooth, creamy kind of dipping cheese. And it's delicious paired with, you know, crackers or veggies or whatever you want.
Very cool. I love it. I love that you mentioned jackfruit. It's definitely my favorite. So tell me, is it pretty easy to find jackfruit in the stores? I mean, Whole Foods, I'm guessing it would have it, or do you need to go to like specialty markets?
I think most stores at least where I live in the Bay Area, I've been able to find it pretty easily at Whole Foods or, any kind of health food kind of store. So I think it's pretty accessible.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Very cool. And I love your cheese recipe idea too. So we've talked about the diets and veganism versus vegetarianism. Let's talk a bit more about thistle. Again, why me and Laura love thistle is because it makes it so much easier for us to eat vegan meals, right? Especially in the, you know, yes, we are at home, we are cooking a lot, but you don't always have time, or you're not brave enough like me to try a new completely vegan recipe.
Right.
So we love thistle for that. And I know you guys are also a very interesting aspect of thistle, as we've been sharing about it with our community, is the packaging, right?
Yeah.
So right now your packaging is 100%, it's recyclable when cleaned, right? It's plastic, but it's recyclable.
Yeah.
Tell me more on how you're thinking about packaging at your company and what's the kind of the future of thistle packaging.
Yeah, definitely. This is such a great question. And it's our number one most urgent sustainability challenge. It's one that we've been really trying to address for quite some time, because we want and need to do better. We want to remove, you know, all kinds of plastic from our packaging. So, I guess I'll give you kind of a bit of context. Like, the reason that it's taking us longer to solve this challenge is that we want to make sure we really get it right and move to a solution that's actually better for the environment rather than just something we can market to customers, but isn't really backed up by the science. Right? And that, especially with my background, that's just something I wasn't willing to do. And the thing is, when you get into the weeds and you read the fine print on a lot of these plastic packaging alternatives, like many of the commercially available compostable packages on the market today, especially the ones that worked for our purposes, their impacts are not necessarily better, and in some cases actually worse when you consider the full life cycle of the product and how it will actually be disposed of by users. So they end up trading, you know, one environmental issue for another. Like, maybe marine environment pollution gets a little bit better, but climate change gets 10 times worse. So it's really hard. So I can go through a couple of the issues that we've found with compostable packaging. So one, like I mentioned, the life cycle, compostable materials can be more resource intensive to produce, which can lead to greater contributions to global warming and pollution and all of those things. And this is also true, doubly true, when you factor in the fact that most of these materials aren't as good at preserving the food itself, which ends up leading to greater food waste. And we all know that food waste is a huge issue, right? And so you have greater...
Absolutely.
Right.
And you guys are delivering fresh meals.
Exactly.
And most of the times, right, if not 100%, they come with ice packs too. And I also was thinking, like, compostable packaging, what if it gets wet, right?
That's exactly also... right.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. The structural integrity is a huge problem. You want to make sure that the food is actually, you know, the package is going to keep that food safe to eat for a customer, you know, multiple days after it's delivered, because you want to extend that shelf life in order to minimize food waste as much as possible, right? And so those were a couple of the issues that we did find with some of the compostable containers. And then another thing is that they they're compostable only under very specific conditions today, which those conditions are in these really resource intensive industrial facilities. It's not like they're compostable in any environment or in your backyard compost heap. It's not the case. It requires a ton of energy to actually compost. And worse is that 98% of Americans don't actually have access to industrial composting facilities. So what happens to those packages, to the packaging then? They end up either in the recycling stream where they're not actually recyclable, so that pollutes the recycling stream, or they end up in landfill. And when they're in landfill or in the marine environment, if they escape, they tend to have a lot of the same issues as plastics, especially those bioplastic packages. And then finally, some containers, I'm sure you all have, you know, you've heard of these forever PFAS, PFAS chemicals that were found to be on some of those molded fiber containers, and they were in the liner of the container that actually made it leak proof and spill proof. So that was a really, that would be a tough sell for me to say, hey, we're going to use these containers that are known to contain these types of chemicals that have been linked to cancer and other, you know, health impacts. So I guess the point is that we know that plastic is not good. That is not at all what I'm saying. I'm only suggesting that some of these materials are not necessarily a panacea either, and that it's a really complicated issue without necessarily a simple answer that involves trade-offs, and you really need to dig into the details of the source materials, the manufacturing process, end of life, et cetera. So that's why that's what we've been doing. And actually, last year, we decided to leapfrog this whole question and really go towards reusable meal containers. Because almost everyone agrees that if you can actually reuse those containers, you know, multiple times, that is an environmental win. And we already do have some kind of a reuse program in place. We reuse all of our thermal cooler bags and ice packs. But unfortunately, the pandemic really put a huge wrench in this plan, right? Everybody stopped their reuse program. We suspended ours for much of the year. And we just couldn't layer on the additional complexity given everything going on with the pandemic. So unfortunately that was a setback, but that doesn't mean we're giving up. We absolutely are not. We actually hope to launch a reusable meal container pilot with a few hundred customers in a few months. And we're also really excited about some of the packaging innovation in compostable materials that we're seeing. So I mentioned, you know, second generation, you know, meat imitation products. Well, there's some really great second generation compostable packaging that solve some of the issues of current compostable. So they degrade in your backyard. They don't require tons of energy. They don't require special facilities. They don't leave behind chemicals, and they're also recyclable in case compost is not available. So whether our solution is reusable or next generation compostable or a mix of both, we just really want to make sure we do it right, that it improves our impact, it isn't greenwashing. So I hope we can crack this challenge and Bizzle can really be a pioneer in the industry on it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, and I love, you know, one of the reasons we started this podcast with Laura, it just gives this format to conversations like this, right? It's easy to post something on social media with an image or even a short video, right? We can only handle a video for 15 seconds these days. But like, yes, these issues are complex. They are not perfect. And I'm so glad you've mentioned that. Yeah, that's very interesting point. I was actually talking just yesterday to someone about packaging. We're also thinking about packaging at Brightly too for the future. You know, I think he mentioned that you know, none of the packaging, we're thinking like just talking about boxes, right? None of the packaging is, you know, 100% recycled. Usually it's like what, 95% recycled. Right. And even that might not even actually be straightforward, better or something like that. And yeah, it's not straightforward. And I admire you guys that you are just like us, you're embracing being imperfectly sustainable, right? And instead of, just kind of slapping this sort of seemingly eco-friendly labels or solutions, you're really, really doing your research because, of course, you know, you have a PhD. That's what you do. You research everything.
That's awesome. Right. A little too much sometimes.
Yes, probably.
I appreciate that.
That's awesome. Well, we're coming to the end of our discussion, but I would love to ask you a couple of questions that we always ask our guests in the very end, sure. Which is, I know you shared a lot of awesome actionable tips with our listeners already, but maybe besides, maybe continuing with the food and cooking theme, but in general, what are some of your favorite simple actionable tips on living sustainably and ethically?
Yeah, sure. So, I guess I'd say my first tip, which is probably no surprise to you or anyone listening, is just to eat as close to a plant-based diet, reduce your meat intake as much as possible. And look, like I know it's uncomfortable to think about. I know we don't want to think about it, but almost 80 billion animals are slaughtered each year for meat. Most of them endure horrendous living conditions while they're alive. It's kind of funny how there's this cognitive dissonance where, you know, people care so much for like polar bears and sea turtles and their pets, but for some reason we don't offer these billions of highly intelligent creatures, you know, the same level of compassion. So I think it's hugely important. And also meat industry workers are treated pretty terribly. You know, the processing plants have been hotspots for COVID outbreaks. You have workers suffering low wages, lack of protections, and they tend to come disproportionately from disadvantaged communities, immigrant communities, communities of color. So, and then on the environmental side, of course, as we all know, you know, meat just has massive environmental impacts across the board. And, you know, a lot of scientists say eating less meat is the single most impactful thing you can do for the environment overall, from climate change to resource use to biodiversity and beyond. So that's that. Not surprising, I'm sure. But my second tip, I guess, would be about just, you know, generally taking stock of consumption across the board and you know, trying to reduce consumption. We tend to focus a lot of conversations, I think, on, you know, zero waste and recycling and composting. And don't get me wrong, those things are so hugely important. But I think that sometimes we don't spend enough time talking about the more impactful but harder things that we should be doing, like maybe not buying so many things in the first place, right? So there's just these massive upstream impacts of our society, right? And resource extraction, you have manufacturing, you have transport, retail, you have all these things. And these tend to dominate the environmental impacts of most products. So, you know, you can think like even if our waste problem magically disappeared, we'd still be burdening the environment with those upstream impacts, which can be best, you know, solved by just not producing the item in the first place. So for me, I always, you know, try.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I just always try to think twice about whether I need that, you know, new pair of sneakers or the latest iPhone or whatever it is. And I just try to, you know, buy less, buy used, repair items whenever possible. And try to make sure that the changes I'm making are really impactful.
Yeah, no, that's a great reminder. We have been talking about this on the podcast a lot. You know, the most sustainable thing you can do is just use what you have.
That's right, 100%.
That's basically it. So my last question to leave us on a positive note, what excites you the most about the ethical and sustainable movement right now?
Yes, that's another good question. And I think it's similar to what you mentioned earlier in the podcast and you've been talking on the podcast, it's this embrace of progress over perfection in the movement, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's really becoming a lot more inclusive. It's everything that you've been talking about. It's like this recognition that it's a journey for all of us and we need to support each other in making incremental changes and not judge each other for lack of perfection. And I really see that difference when it comes to food. I felt in the past there might have been more of this feeling of judgment around not being able to go fully vegan, for example, which, you know, I think could have led to a perverse outcome where people were just put off by the idea of veganism, right? And they ended up not taking steps in the right direction at all because they felt intimidated or they might be ridiculed. And I think that's really changed now, as we've talked a lot about the rise in popularity of flexitarian diet, you know, this like plant-based and plant-forward labeling, not a strict, you know, vegan food identity. There's like this acknowledgement that we all have these mosaic identities and that's okay. And food is emotional, has a special role in our lives. And we need to respect personal needs and the need for balance. So I think generally anytime you can be more inclusive and bring more people into the circle, you know, trying to do the right thing, that it's like you said earlier in the podcast, that the impact will be larger overall. So that's what really excites me right now.
I love it. I love it. And I'm so glad that's how you're seeing it as well. Well, Shiri, thank you so much for the conversation. I'm going to go eat my Thistle lunch. but yeah, it was really great to talk to you. And thank you so much for all the work that you're doing.
Of course. I hope you enjoy that lunch. But thank you so much for having me.
I will.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. As always, you can get show notes and explore lots more content related to all things eco-friendly living by checking out brightly.eco/podcast.
And don't forget to join in on the conversation that's happening on our Facebook group. Simply search Good Together Ethical Shopping and it'll come up. You can also leave us a question through voicemail. The link is on brightly.eco/podcast.
If you're into social media, give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, and all of the channels. Our username is brightly.eco.
Finally, we want to leave you with a reminder. Every day is a chance for you to create change, and you're already covered for today since you joined us here on the podcast. Stay kind and live brightly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's easy to create your dream kitchen with Clearview Cabinetry at Menards. With multiple finishes to choose from, you'll be sure to find a style that fits perfect for you. Clearview Cabinetry offers features like soft closed doors and drawers as standard and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Explore Clearview's cabinet options and start designing today in store or on Menards.com, where you can find more of our great deals going on now. Save